All right, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hello, and welcome to the CDOT Show, presented by Inquirer Sports. I am one of your hosts, Josh Sneed, joined as always by the star and namesake of the program, Trent Rosecrans. How are you, sir?
That is the loosest definition of the word star ever used.
Are you good?
I'm fantastic. I was on a flight at 10:50 Pacific time last night. Arrived at CVG at 6 o'clock this morning. I'm in a great mood.
Awesome. This looks like I'm going to be doing the heavy lifting tonight.
Don't you always?
So how was the West Coast? How was it other than...
It was fantastic. I mean, I get... Carolyn, my boss, pays me either way, whether they win or lose, thank God. It was fantastic. You know, I was telling Tuffy, because Tuffy hasn't been to either of those. I guess we hadn't introduced Tuffy yet. But anyway, he hadn't been to either of those parks. But San Francisco's my favorite park in baseball. I think it's the best park in baseball.
Very cool.
And it's just beautiful. And then the other thing was, I think I put it on Instagram the other day, is like, you know, my scorecard has weather as one of the things. And, you know, they say pregame temperature or first pitch temperature, 76 degrees. So for weather... For 3 days, I just have written San Diego because it's always the same.
Beautiful.
It's always fantastic. And
yeah, my friend used to live there, and I was out there visiting, and I said, "Man, what's it? This is like 80 degrees, no humidity." He's like, "This is how it is 9 months a year." And I said, "Well, what's it like the other 3 months?" And he said, "Even
75.
Better."
Yeah, nice I want to be a weatherman in San Diego. It's my dream job.
I just want to live in San Diego, man. It'd be fun.
Let's bring in our guest, because I want to talk about this road trip specifically, and I think he could probably provide some insight on it as well. His name is Tuffy Rhodes. He is a West High grad.
I am.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Get right up on the mic so the folks at home can hear you. You had a long baseball career, most of which was spent in Japan. We're going to get into all of your background, but while we're here in the moment, let's talk about this road trip, because I think it was kind of surprising at the beginning and the end of it, sort of the outcome. I don't think anybody, if you would have said, we're going to take two or three from one team, we're going to sweep another, and we're going to get swept by another, I don't think you would have been able to guess what happened on this road trip. Would you agree with that?
Cubs, Giants, or Padres? Yeah.
Yeah, either one of you. I can talk for an hour if you
know.
Guys
I mean,
like. But
the Padres are always kind of weird. It's always weird when you go out there. They've had some strange games with the Padres. You know, last year, Kristen Norfia hitting a two-run homer off Aroldis Chapman. A couple years ago, the Herrera and Harang game. It always seems like this Reds team has some different things that go up on the West Coast, especially in San Diego. And then San Diego took, what, two or three from him at Great American.
Yeah. And taking four in San Francisco is no
first team
easy
ever.
Task.
First team to ever win four at AT&T Park, sweep the Giants at AT&T Park.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we're giant killers, huh?
Yeah.
Giant killers. Look at this guy's got jokes, you guys. And the Cubs, two out of three, right? Wait. What?
Yeah.
Okay, you looked at me funny.
I look at you funny.
You thought
all
I was
the
going somewhere else with that?
Yeah.
I don't count, man. Everybody beat the Cubs.
You spent
not
some time
the
with
Mets.
The Cubs, right?
That's why I can say that, because everybody beats the Cubs.
That was, I mean, to this day, it's amazing, Tuffy, because you bring up your name, and everybody remembers one event. I mean, well, I guess three events in one day.
Yeah.
Take us back. That's 1994, right?
Yes.
Doc Gooden on the mound.
Yes.
First home run.
Curveball? Yes. A 3-2 curveball. I couldn't believe I hit it. I'm looking for a fastball. He throws me a 3-2 curveball. Hit it in left center field. Great feeling. Next to bat, he threw the first pitch in my head.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Rookie not showing me up. And I just wiped myself off, got back up.
Oh, you were a rookie.
Well, I was a rookie with the Cubs.
Theoretically. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, got up, wiped myself off, hit another one.
So, okay, what are you thinking the third time you go to the plate?
Now you've hit two home runs off of Doc Gooden
on opening day at Wrigley Field.
Please don't hit me in the head. Please. And, you know, he threw the first pitch back up and in again, got to 3-1, threw a fastball away, and hit another one.
So. That's amazing.
Round
That's amazing
bases,
to do that off
like
of anybody.
Flying. I am going about as fast as I could. as fast as I could. I was happy. I was nervous. I was all of the above.
And so you're thinking, well, I'm on pace for about 500 home runs this year.
I was thinking that, but we were losing like 12-4. So I was like, you know, let's just have this game. Hopefully we can come back. I don't think so. Let's just end this game on a good note. But we lost, end up losing 12-8, and got interviewed every day. First get interviewed on losses. That was amazing.
What is that like? Like, I mean, obviously playing Major League Baseball is awesome, right? But it's for the Cubs. and to get there, you have to spend time in Des Moines.
Yes.
Right?
And I was in Des Moines, too.
I've been to Des Moines.
But we won a championship in Des Moines, so that worked out well.
It's still Des Moines, though.
It is Des Moines.
We're looking for a place to party, and every place, the only thing that's open is an Applebee's at 10 p.m.
It's funny, I gave Angel the card I'd gotten, my boss Angel Rodriguez, who's soon to be former boss Angel Rodriguez, who's a huge Astros fan. This card is a 91. I think it's like a 91 I Upper Deck.
Maybe you're 90 going into 91.
So yeah, and it's of you. It says Rookie Sluggers or something, and it says, and it's you, Luis Gonzalez, Jeff Bagwell. So you came up through, did you come up through the, you were drafted by the Astros, right?
I was drafted by the Astros, yes. We was pretty good in the minor leagues, and we got to the major leagues, all three of us at the same time, and we played well, but I just couldn't keep up with those guys. They took off, and I.
There might be other reasons.
Well, yeah. There was a lot of other reasons, but, you know, I was young, I was 20, turning 21, but you live and learn.
If you could go back now, seeing the career he had,
time I look at that card, I know I could have been in the same situation as Jeff Bagwell and Luis Gonzalez if I had my head on right.
Really? It was you put it on yourself and your head?
100%. I didn't.
What does that mean? I mean, that's interesting.
I wasn't a student of the game. You know, I played baseball until it was time to stop playing baseball, and I left. I went out, did everything besides stay focused on baseball. Chase girls, to be exact, if you want to just go ahead and say it.
Yeah, let's say it. Go ahead.
My priorities wasn't straight.
Do you see that as, I mean, that's pretty common. I mean, you throw 19-year-old kids, 18-year-old kids in Des Moines, and you figure out what the heck you're going to do in Des Moines. Well, girls are everywhere.
Well, yeah, but, you know, but Jeff Bagwell and Luis Gonzalez found a way to do it, and I should have found a way, too.
That's a pretty good crew.
Oh, outstanding.
Well, and then Biggio was pretty young then, too, right?
Biggio was.
Was Bergman
he was a little older
that,
than
in that group.
No, Bergman was younger.
Way later?
Yeah.
Yeah, Biggio was a year older than us. We had Steve Finley there also.
That's Kurt right.
Schilling was a year older than us.
That's right.
Caminetti was Eddie. Now that was an awesome guy. You know, his demons got the best of him, but you're talking about as a person. It don't get any better than Ken Caminetti.
Really?
Yeah, just a great
good
guy.
Teammate.
Great. Him and Jeff Bagwell raked up in the top 10 of my best teammates of all time, and I have about 3 or 4 in Japan now too.
Yeah. Wow.
So let's. I want to get to Japan because this is. I saw the movie Mr. Baseball.
Yeah.
And you know where?
I'm ready.
You know where I saw Mr. Baseball?
Where?
I saw it in Yokosuka, Japan.
And you know where I saw Mr. Baseball?
Where?
In Osaka, Japan.
Really?
It's the first thing they give you off the plane. Watch this. Watch
I mean,
this.
Like, I was in a room, I was in a theater full of Americans who were living in Japan. And, like, I was talking to somebody about this movie the other day, and they were like, you know, I thought the baseball was pretty good. And I go, the living in Japan stuff was spot on.
Yes,
it was 100%. Unbelievable. Like, I love that movie because, like, the theater I was in was full of Americans, not in the exact same situation. You were in the exact same situation. But it was full of Americans who we just rolled. And the people in that theater laughed at stuff that people in that you probably didn't laugh at. And it was spot on for how it feels to be, and the word that they use in there and that is used a lot, and Tuffy will probably think it's his name, is Gaijin. Some of us are Baka Gaijin.
Yes.
I would be a Baka Gaijin. Gaijin is foreigner.
Do you want to explain? Okay. I was like,
Gaijin means foreigner.
Yes.
And when you were a Gaijin, and Tuffy, you and I both probably stood out pretty easily.
I was going to say, neither one of you are blending in.
We're not blending exactly in, especially, you know, 16, 17-year-old me. Yeah. And Baca is stupid. So yes. Baca Gaijin is stupid what foreigner. I was, especially a stupid foreigner. And yeah. And I earned that name. And I'm sure you probably did a couple things earning that name, yeah. too.
It's funny you talk about Baca Gaijin because that's the name of my fantasy football team.
Is it really?
Well, actually, not the team. It's our whole league. We're called the Baca Gaijins. And it's about 10 to 12 foreign baseball players that play in Japan. And one of the guys came up, Cliff Brumfield came up with the name Baca Gaijin, and we're like Baca Gaijin 7, season 7 right now. So.
That's hilarious.
We're doing pretty good.
So what is like what is the money situation for Japanese baseball? Are you a star over there like baseball players are stars over here?
Well, yeah. Well, we don't make $250 million, but
right.
We do darn good for ourselves. Yeah. I'm retired. I retired in 2009, and I've been pretty blessed.
Well, the other thing is there's a social status, and I think this is something that's kind of hard. You know, in the United States, a baseball player is kind of a star, and he's looked at, and there's a standing. But it's a whole different type of respect in Japan. And I think the Japanese culture is one of those things I always feel that you have to experience to even have the slightest bit to understand and trying to talk about it. And, like, the only people listening to this right now who understand are probably Tuffy and I, because
yes.
We've both been there. But there is a higher respect. I wrote a paper in college on the Japanese baseball player as the modern-day samurai for my history of the samurai class. Got an A on it, by the way, most importantly.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Most importantly, we're here to brag about my college
probably
grades.
Still on your parents' fridge, isn't it?
It should be.
Good story.
It should be.
Let's go.
But the thing is, there is a certain level of society and a respect that goes along with being that athlete and being especially a baseball player more than anything.
I think sumo ranks up at the top.
Yes. Yeah. Sumo's different because it is foreign.
Yes.
I mean, it's Japanese, and it's uniquely Japanese, even though Akebono stepped on my friend's foot once.
Well.
Yeah, you again.
Name dropping.
Name dropping. Akebono was the first foreign grand champion. Yeah. Huge dude, Samoan dude. But anyway, he was really drunk, so he didn't feel it.
He took me drinking one night.
Out in Roppongi?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, it was in Osaka. So
it was Osaka.
It was Seaside Bashi. Yeah. So, and you're talking about just a normal tequila bottle, Akebono tequila bottle about that big. And he got three or four sumo guys with him.
3.5 feet tall for the people listening.
Yeah, but it looked like a normal bottle in his hand, I'm sure.
And he got three or four sumo guys with him, so wasn't a good night for me. I'm glad I had a day off the next day.
When did the offer come for you to go to Japan, and how did you make that decision?
It was simple for me, either be a fireman or go play baseball in Japan.
Really? So your baseball career in the majors was... What year is this?
This is 95, the end of 95. I was up and down. That was the Cubs again. I was up and down and end up in Boston in the minor leagues injured, but on the major league roster. And I just, about 26 years old, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Enough is enough. Either I'm getting myself together one way or the other. And my agent called me and said, I got some good news and bad news. And I said, what's the bad news? He said, what's the good news? He said, I got a place that wants you to play every day. And I said, what's the bad news? He says, in Japan.
So and it's just like Mr. Baseball.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it, I getting paid in dollar or yen? I needed to know that, and come to find out, it really didn't matter because
either way is pretty good. It's not pesos.
Yes, indeed. But I didn't know any better. But Japan changed my life. And you can understand that, Trent.
Oh yeah. I mean, and I went as a 17-year-old, 16-year-old, mm-hmm. and so it kind of opened my eyes a little bit. But for you, I mean, you're a kid from Avondale, right?
Yes.
When you're a kid from Avondale, hell, once you got drafted by the Astros, that changed your life.
Well. Yeah, it did, but at the same time, I played baseball in the summer for Midland for a long time, so I traveled a lot with that team. So when I got to the Astros minor league system, we started in Sarasota, we went to Asheville, so it was still like I was traveling with the minor league team, but as a college player. And so every place we went was a great college, like within striking distance of 18 to 22-year-old men.
And girls, so, more importantly.
And girls. So, you know, Asheville, we was back and forth with Wake Forest, Tucson, we're at University of Arizona. It just goes without saying, on and on and on. But when I got to Japan, I really became a student of the game.
Yeah.
Because they teach you how to do things different that they don't teach you here in America. And I love America baseball 110%. But, you know, Japan don't really give you a choice.
Well, talk about the spring training. It's just the differences in your spring training.
Yeah, 2 months. In the first month is no family members allowed. That means no wife, no kids, no mother, father, just you and your teammates. You're getting the unity, and they really want to judge your character.
And didn't you have, like, practices a couple times a day?
Twice a day, like football, yes. We start from
2 days in baseball.
Yeah, 8 to 12, and then we have an hour off, and then from 2 to 5.
And then it's funny because, you know, spring training now for Major League guys, it's like 2 hours of work and then
you're golfing at
golfing.
Three.
Yeah.
You know, but the good thing about it balances out both ways because in baseball in America, it makes you do things yourself, and that's the good thing about it. You're going to be a success one way or another. I mean, you're going to be successful or you're going to fail. It's up to you. In Japan, they don't give you a choice. Everybody has to do the same thing. We all had we had a meeting at 5:30 before the game. We talked about the same pitcher that we might have faced last week, but we had the same meetings every day. We practiced on off days. We traveled as a team. We had to wear the same suit. They didn't give you an option.
Yeah. I mean, both have their advantages.
No,
Do you think that helped you? I mean, that kind of, you talked about yourself being an undisciplined person.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm assuming that's what you were saying.
Yes.
Yeah, lacking that discipline, but going to Japan, it was forced into you. It's like the army.
I mean, I can do just about anything, but it's just like if you go to a gym, you're not going to push yourself as hard as a personal trainer going to push you.
Wait,
so
a gym?
What is this thing called?
What is that?
I'm sorry.
Speaking Japanese already? Because I am not.
Hey, guys, look, I'm retired 5 years, and I've gained about 35 pounds, and I'm the happiest I've ever been.
So yeah, me too.
A lot of loving. Yeah, you know, you're in Cincinnati, man. You know, you're getting ready for the winter.
So you played for Midland. Any notable teammates there when you were at Midland?
Ken Griffey Jr. was there, Lee May Jr., Pete Rose Jr. Yeah, we had all the
juniors.
We had all the juniors, yeah.
We had the juniors. Yeah.
You're on the junior squad?
Yeah, I was on the junior squad.
Sparky Anderson Jr., your coach.
I wish Sparky was my coach. He would have helped me a little.
Yeah.
Ralph was my coach, yeah. I can't remember. And Mr. Ackerman. Oh, yeah. That's right.
But you taught, and then you went to Western Hills.
Yes. All the way from Avondale.
How'd that happen?
My mother didn't give me a choice. She told me, I'm going to wake up at 6:30 in the morning, and you're going to catch the bus to Western Hills. And I said, okay. Actually, I went to Gamble Middle School, too. So I went to school out there my whole life.
So Avondale, you probably could have been at St. Bernard if you really wanted to.
I offered a scholarship to go to Purcell Marion, in which I was going to go, but St. Bernard said, if you're going to go to a Catholic school, you're going to St. Bernard. And I said, well, I'll go back to Western Hills.
So. Well, then you were telling a story earlier. When we had Mike Cameron here, we asked him who the best players in Cincinnati he had ever seen. The first names out of his mouth was Tuffy Rhodes.
Yeah, Mike is a pretty good guy.
And so you were there, 86 was your senior year?
Yes.
And so Moeller had a notable player in 86 as a junior.
Mm-hmm.
You were a pitcher. You pitched against Ken Griffey Jr., right?
Yeah, I got a lot of good stories about junior.
Good. I'm going to see Ken soon.
Let's start with the Midland one. We both played for the Cardinal. He was He was 1 year younger than me, so I jumped to the Redskins. He was a center fielder with the Cardinal, the 16-under team. And even though I was 16, I played with the 18-under team. But every time me and Ken played together, I played center field and he played right or left.
Really?
Yeah. So I got that under my belt. I can at least brag about that much. But after that, it stopped. Oh, and I also got him out in high school the year we won state.
So you guys beat them for state?
We beat them for regional going to state.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you pitched against them, right?
I didn't start the game. We were winning 4-1, and they had a guy on first and second. That's the one out. I was playing center field at the time, and the coach called me in and said, we need you to get this guy out. And it was Ken, and I said, I'm going to challenge him, and I threw 3 fastballs, and he flew out the right field. I mean, he just missed it, too.
It looks the same in the scorebook.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And he ran past me from second base and said, you got lucky. And I looked back at him and said, yes, I did. Yes, I did.
I mean, that's still, how many, That's two former big leaguers on one field.
Yeah, you know, we had, you know, baseball in Cincinnati is unbelievable. And the thing about it that I, you know, I go back and forth. I was in Houston for 24 years, and I just moved back to Cincinnati last July. And I go back and forth with guys from Texas, from Florida, and California all the time about baseball in the Midwest. And I, the first thing I say to them guys is that you guys play baseball all year round.
Yeah.
You know, we have to worry about winters, and falls and winters. You guys get the luxury to play in October and November and December. And if we got that chance to do that with all the baseball players that comes out of this area, you know, ain't no telling what will happen.
I put Dave Parker and Ken Griffey Jr., Barry Larkin up against anybody.
I just found
and
out.
Tuffy Rhodes.
And Tuffy Rhodes.
Thanks, man.
And Adam Hyzdu.
Uh-huh. I'll pay
Adam
you later.
Adam Hyzdu. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Adam Hyzdu, yes.
Buddy
wow.
Bell.
Wow, yes. Ron Oyster.
Ron Oyster, yeah. I mean, goes Dave on. Justice.
Dave Justice. Wow. I mean, it just goes on and on. That's why I tell people all the time, Cincinnati is a baseball city. You know, it's a baseball city. I mean, I love the Bengals. I am everything in Ohio except a Cleveland Browns fan, so forgive me about that part. But I'm a Bengals fan, a Reds fan.
I don't
fan.
Think anybody's going to ask okay, for your yeah. forgiveness for
Somebody
that.
Might. Yeah, it's always one. It's always
yeah,
one.
Yeah, but the other thing is he's a Cleveland Browns fan. So, I mean, so that's sad enough already. It's so like being a Cubs fan.
Let's go back to Japan. What? How do you, like, you're – right when you first arrive, what's it like for you to get acclimated to the country, the language?
You know, my story was unique because I had no other choice but to adapt. I had no other chance to play baseball anywhere else unless I wanted to go play minor league baseball again. So what I did was I tried to adapt as fast as I can. So I grabbed an international book, language book, and then just started exploring. You know, I didn't want my interpreters to follow me everywhere around. I just wanted to learn the culture, and plus I wanted to know what they were saying about me. So, guys, you know, when you get over there, you know, the first month was tough. That first month of February, you sit in that room by yourself, and you're just baseball for 12 hours, and I looked up at the ceiling, and it was pitch black, but I still, for some reason, could see the ceiling. I said to myself, excuse me, I was like, what the hell am I doing here? You know, but at the same time, under my same breath, I realized this is my chance to play baseball and become a student of the game of baseball, and I took advantage of it, and I was fortunate enough to be over there 14 years. I say 14 years because even though I missed 2006, I got paid for it, so, so I was under contract.
Well, but 2006, you...
I went to the Reds.
You went to training. The Reds in yeah. spring training, and were the last guy cut.
Well, you know, that it started out as to see if I was ready. The Reds did me a great, they did a great job for me. They offered me a contract. I was, you know, happy with the contract, had no problem with, but the main goal for me at that time was to see if I was ready to go back and play baseball in Japan.
Really?
That was for me because I didn't think that I was going to, you know, being 36, didn't think I was going to make the Reds team unless I did something super or played every day. So, but it got down there, ended up being fun. Started getting real fun. I started enjoying myself again and playing baseball in America. Forgot how fun it was playing baseball in America and ended up having a great month and a half and was the last guy cut.
Wait, how many guys have gone into spring training with their goal is not to make the team?
I got a phone call.
It was Wayne Krivsky, right?
Yeah, I got a phone call from Wayne. He was like, how would you like to come to the Reds spring training? I kind of thought, like, you know, I'm thinking maybe I don't really have a chance to make this team, so I'm thinking, you know, but it's the Cincinnati Reds. It was my team I thought I was always going to play for growing up, and I had to take that opportunity, so I took the chance. But at the same time, I had my agent telling me also about three or four teams looking at me in Japan.
And, you know, but this is Ken Griffey Jr. is there again.
Yes.
Adam Dunn.
Yes.
Sean had... Had he just been traded, Casey?
Who was that?
2006 or 5?
Hamilton just left. And also,
he had just been traded. This was the year before Josh Hamilton.
And that was Joey's, he was in double A at that time.
Yeah, and Joey Votto was in double A.
Yeah, just
did like, you do you remember Joey Votto as a double A-er?
We were, actually, me and Joey, our lockers were right next to each other. So I got to know him for that year, for that month and a half. We hung out a lot. I gave him about 4 or 5 of my Japanese bats. He gave me a pair of underwear.
Okay. This has been the C-Dot Show.
I couldn't believe it. He said, hey, Tuffy, I want to thank you, and gave me a pair of underwear. I was like, Thanks. You know,
it's, you know what though? You put that shit on eBay right now.
It was a brand name.
It's a Canadian tradition. A lot of people don't know about that.
Actually, he invited
it's either
me,
underwear
invited
or
me to
syrup.
Those guy jeans.
Maple. But no, he invited me to Toronto, and we got pretty close, you know. But
did you see a future MVP there?
You know, we were in a group together, just watching him hit, and questions that he asked about hitting, I knew he could hit. I didn't, you know, MVP, that's just like winning the World Series. You want to win the World Series every year, but it's hard to predict. But I knew he was going to be a great player.
Yeah, interesting. Even then. Wow. But so then you do go back to Japan.
I did in 2007, yeah.
And you played how many more three more years?
Got a three-year contract, sure did. And played well. With the Osaka Buffaloes.
The Buffaloes,
yeah,
right, which
Buffaloes,
was,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So what I find amazing is that your career has spanned, you know, from playing with Ken Griffey Jr. in Little League, but you faced Yu Darvish, right?
Yes.
In the last series of your career, is that correct?
That is.
That's a player who is very well known today and in his prime. And I mean, like that says a lot about your career that you have played with both of those.
Yeah, and every time I see him strike somebody out in a major league uniform, it kind of makes me feel good because he probably struck me out maybe 15, 20 times.
But you get him?
Oh, I got him good, too. You know, you take that. That's when I was a home run hitter, you know, and my coach called me in the office one year in Japan, and I was hitting about 310, about 25, 30 home runs, 80 RBIs, and still in bases. I was still agile. But he called me in the office and said he would rather for me to hit 280, 40 home runs to 50 home runs and 120 RBIs. So he told me to take some chances, and I did.
Wow.
Wow. And, I mean, but you also faced Tanaka.
Tanaka, Matsuzaka.
Matsuzaka. I mean, you faced all these guys.
I faced Irabu when he was
good.
Man, yeah. I wish that's what I said to everybody. You guys should have caught Irabu before he came over here. So.
Yeah, do you feel that gives... I'm trying to think of the right word to use. But, I mean, do you point to these guys and say, hey, listen, because some guys may not look at 474 home runs in Japan, 10th all time.
Yes.
So that's a lot of freaking home runs. I don't care if it's in Little League. 474 home runs is a lot of home runs. Do you look at it when you see the successes of the Darvishes and the Tanakas and be like, listen, this is the type of baseball I was playing?
Well, that's what I try to explain to people when they always ask me, comparing the major leagues and a major league in America compared to a Japanese baseball. I would say Japanese baseball is 4A. It's not major league baseball, but it's higher than triple A baseball. You don't have as many guys you don't have a first baseman, third baseman, left fielder, right fielder that can hit the ball out the ballpark like you do here in America. But you'll have a third baseman and a left fielder. You'll have two out of the four.
Yeah.
You won't have six or seven guys throwing 96 and 97, but you'll have three or four guys that can throw the ball that hard.
Well, and they not only do they throw 96, 97,
the shuto,
the breaking stuff.
The fork ball. I mean,
shuto, explain to people what the shuto is.
Let me see what. Okay. It's a right handed screwball. If you're a right handed pitcher and if you're a left handed pitcher, you know screwball, right?
Yeah. Guys,
screwball, no?
Breaks the opposite way.
Okay, yeah, breaks the opposite of a slider, but it's the same as a fastball. It moves. It's a two-seamer that don't go down. It just stays on the same plane, and it moves. If you're
kind of like a cutter, but the other cuts the other way.
But it's like a right-handed batter facing a right-handed batter, and he's throwing it in towards you.
And so it just breaks your...
Oh, it gets you good. And then they had left-handers start throwing shutos about 2000. After I figured out how to hit the shuto from the right hand, after about 5 years, then they start throwing left-handers, start throwing shutos at me, so I had to make the adjustment.
I mean, it's funny, I think we go back to Mr. Baseball, and they call it the great equalizer in that thing, and it is.
It is. It is.
Why don't we see that here?
I think, you know, we have baseball in America is like checkers, if I can keep it simple. We got guys who hit home runs, and we got pitchers that throw fastballs. Here we come, fastball, three balls, no strikes. We're throwing fastballs, two balls, no strikes. This is a power league. You get in Japan, it's more like chess. You can start the first inning, bases loaded, the guy throw you six fork balls. It's called nantoka baseball, and in Japanese, that means whatever it takes to win. So baseball in America, the guys behind you, the coaches and the managers get mad if you start throwing pitches that are not strikes because guys get boring. But in Japan, they don't mind throwing each batter 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 pitches.
What also, I mean, yeah, you know, 100 pitches to a Japanese pitcher is warm-ups.
I watched Matsuzaka throw 365 pitches one day.
What?
Take a day off and come back and throw 181 pitches. They feel like the if they're...
Do the Yankees know about this?
You know, but they feel... Like, after the games, you know, I can go on and on about Japanese baseball, but...
Please. That's why you're here.
But, you know, like, after the game, the hitters, all the hitters, or the, most of the hitters, I'll say 75% of the hitters, have to go and take dry swings. That means you grab your bat, and you go out there, and you, if you're on the road at a hotel, you go downstairs to the lobby, and you got 20 guys just practicing on their swing.
Yeah, let's just say I did the not see that, that is hilarious. The Westin St. Francis in San Francisco.
Yeah, you won't see that here. But that's just, and you know, extra hitting here is 15, 20 minutes. Extra hitting over there by yourself is an hour. They'll run in four or five pitching coaches, and you'll hit off of one of the guys for 15, 20 minutes. You'll take a water break and everything. They'll put the towel on your head. And
what kind of crowds do they draw over there? What's the average crowd for a baseball game?
Oh, well... You can, well, the stadiums are not as big, but believe you, we're going to you're going to see at least about 20 to 30,000 people, and it's like a football atmosphere. It's not like a baseball game here. It's like you're at a college football game. They have the drums, they have the horns, they have the cheerleaders, they have this the chants.
Kato Bose, Rose.
I don't know that I can't join
it's
in.
It's
I'm
just
sorry.
The chant that I.
You looked at me like, why aren't you participating?
You probably hear this in your sleep.
Yeah, oh, I used to be in the outfield. And, you know, the chant was going so much right behind my head with them horns. I used to be out there saying to myself, Kanto Pase, and saying another guy's name, you know, as opposed to saying Kanto. You know, it's just right there in your head. It's just
what does it mean?
Kanto Pase, like get a hit, do your best. And then home runs, Rhodes, Kanto Pase, Rhodes, K-O-K, the other pitcher, like knock him out, hit a home run, knock it out the ballpark. You know, then they
and then the horns,
boom,
and then everybody has this, like
fireworks, and then the dragon going through the outfield. Or
it is
that might be China, man.
It's a lot like soccer.
he said dragons and.
I'm the comedian. I'm supposed
That's
to
no
say
problem.
Dumb stuff
I have no
like
problem
that.
With that. Nothing wrong with laughter.
It's like a soccer. You know, you hear the horns and the chants and the whole thing, and yeah. it's so the word is foreign to an American. You know.
It is.
And it's fantastic and
dragon.
Nihongo hanashimasu ka?
Nihongo daijoubu desu.
That's the extent of mine, but not the extent of Tasafi's. I took Japanese 20 years ago, but you speak Japanese. Why? A lot of guys go over there and don't learn the language. You see a lot of guys over here who don't learn the language.
Don't learn.
But that was important to you.
It was very important. I wanted to learn the culture. I mean, you have an opportunity to learn a culture for free. You know, I didn't have to go there for school or anything. Yeah. I just went over to play baseball and got an opportunity to learn a whole new culture for free. So I took advantage of it.
And that had to help you. I mean,
it did.
That was the thing. But it also probably helped you not only in baseball, but in financially. I'm guessing it helped you because... They see this guy, Gene. Hey, he speaks Japanese. We're gonna take advantage of this. We probably did.
I had about four Gyunyu commercials, which is milk.
Yeah.
And I had Nike shoe contract, of course, Mizuno contracts. On a you know those their game shows are not like our game shows. Yeah.
That is probably the biggest understatement that you will hear tonight.
So I did all that. You know, I embraced the culture. You know, I did everything they asked of me and more. And as when I got to about my eighth season, I was able to acclimate some of my ideas back into their culture because, you know, Japanese culture is tough to get into. You know, they're tough.
You think Cincinnati's tough to get into. Wait till you get in Japan. Man,
yeah, you know, the culture, you know, it just, like you said, outsider. If you're not Japanese, you're outsider.
But you are one of the rare people. At the end of your career,
one
you
of
were
three,
technically
I think.
A gaijin.
You know, I was the first.
You were the first.
I was the first, you know, so.
He was granted free agency, so he wasn't.
There are rules against how many foreigners you can have on a team.
Yes.
By the end of your career, you were considered Japanese.
Yeah, even though I was black with braids, I was still Japanese. And my teammates got so funny, and we got so comfortable with each other, and I enjoyed myself in Japan, and I mean, it changed my life. they should call me Black and Ease, and I had no problem with it. I had no problem with it because every 20th of my check was in it.
I didn't care if it was
right
yet.
On time. You guys are taking care of me. We had a good time. My teammates told, you know, I was blessed to play with the Kentucky Buffaloes because it's like playing with the Minnesota Twins. If you go to Tokyo and play with the Giants or you play with the Hanshin Tigers, it's like you're playing with the Yankees or the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And I started out slow the first month. You know, so, but if I was with the Giants or Hanshin Tigers, they probably would have got rid of me. But, you know, when you're playing in a city like Minnesota, it's not that crowded. You can easily, you can take your lumps, and then you can learn how to play baseball in Japan, which I did.
I mean, it's almost like, because Kintetsu's in Osaka, and so you have it's almost like the Giants and the A's.
Yes.
With the Tigers,
the
Buffaloes.
There you go. That's a good. Yeah, we were the A's.
Yeah, we were the A's.
Yeah, and then Hanshin was the Giants. So
well, that's also the different league, and the different leagues kind of have that little brother.
Yeah, naturally.
Baby brother
the Central League is equivalent to the National League, and the Pacific League is equivalent to the American League.
Yeah, and
the Central. We were the baby brother to the Central League for a long time.
Because they had the Giants.
Because they have the Giants and the Hanshin Tigers.
Yeah, the Giants are like they're like the Yankees, the Dallas Cowboys, and the Lakers rolled into one.
All rolled into one. I played for them for 2 years. I loved playing in Tokyo, but it was different than playing for the Kintetsu Buffaloes as opposed to Tokyo Giants.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, let the folks in the house refill their drinks. We will come right back with our Q&A. This is the C-Dot Show, presented by Inquirer Sports and sponsored by Cincy Shirts. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is the C-Dot Show, presented by Inquirer Sports, sponsored by Cincy Shirts, where I'd like to remind you that if you use promo code C-Dot, you will save 20% off your entire order at cincyshirts.com. Also wanted to tell you real quick about a little side project I have going on with the Inquirer and Cincinnati.com. It's called The Drive. And basically, it is a blatant ripoff of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. But we did the first episode. It was myself and Todd Frazier. I picked him up in a 1956 Buick Super on loan from Jeff Weiler and his collection.
Todd was scared shitless going over the bridge. He told me we were talking about it
the
other day.
Yeah, because the wheels
over
didn't
the Roebling
grip.
Bridge.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, thanks, Trent.
Watch it. Hey, it's spoiling the end, though, so they have to watch the end to get to the
exactly.
good part.
No, it was an absolute blast. So I picked him up. We drove around downtown. We almost died because the brakes went out, and then the car
brakes
stalled.
Brakes went.
Where'd
out.
You get this car from?
Jeff Weiler.
Ford.
yeah, Jeff Weiler. Hey man, this guy's not promoting you too well out there.
You're not gonna find this on the lot. This was brought out of retirement.
You got any Ford Deuces, Cutlass under?
You can
442s or something. I need to get one of those.
It was a beautiful, beautiful car, and very old, and
I had
to learn how to drive it. I take full onus on the events that happened, but it did add some comedy. Todd was great. We had some really good conversation, so you should definitely check that out. The quick link is bit.ly, and then you do /drivingFrazier, and that'll be the quick link, but you can also get to it from Cincinnati.com. We're going to have more episodes, but the first one is up just as of this past week, and people are really digging it. So
did he get it wrong? Yes, you got it wrong. Drive Frazier. bit.ly, right?
Can I get a heads up that it was not my fault? I said it exactly as I was told. Drive Frazier.
Drive
okay.
Frazier.
So bit.ly/drivefrazier. But just go to Cincinnati.com and you can find it really easily there.
Just go over and over and over.
It was
to get our web clicks up on there.
It was an absolute blast. And we want to thank SynFed Credit Union for sponsoring that.
And we'll have a new episode soon, so be on the lookout for that. Also, if you're on Twitter, follow Trent. He is at @ctrent. I am at Josh Sneed. And, of course, follow Inquirer and at Inquirer Sports for all of your information about all the fun stuff that the Inquirer does. And you will be reminded that we have our next CDOT show here at Motor on Monday, August 11th. And we'll be letting you know who the guest is for that. But our guest tonight, Tuffy Rhodes. This is the Q&A part of our show, and we'll let some folks answer questions, and then we will shut the mics off and reward those who showed up tonight with a chance to ask some questions that only they will get to hear the answer to. So our first question comes from...
Well, Josh. Let's go, Josh.
A different Josh, not me.
All right. Tuffy, who were the toughest pitchers you faced stateside and in Japan? Also, what was your favorite thing about playing in Japanese League?
Toughest pitcher I faced, well, I faced Matsuzaka when he was 18 in his best year. So I would say Matsuzaka was the toughest I faced, and also Darvish was the toughest in Japan. I don't have too many in America, sorry.
You know, not Doc Gooden.
Yeah, oh, well, yeah, well,
boom!
You're like, I didn't kid, you know, people always... teased me about Doc Gooden, said I didn't catch him in his prime, but hey, that wasn't my fault. I caught him, so, Darvish and Matsuzaka was darn tough pitchers. And Uehara, the stopper for the Boston Red Sox, he was a starter in Japan for the Tokyo Giants, and he went 20-1 one year. And when he was, people don't realize this guy stole 96 miles an hour with a nasty forkball, so he's up there pretty tough too.
Thanks.
And what was your favorite thing about playing over there? I think was the second question.
The food. Outstanding.
Buffets? Is there a lot of buffets?
No.
No buffets.
Why are you over there stereotyping?
There's no Japanese word for buffet.
And everything is buffet. It's China. Like Chinese food, man. You want the dragons? And what else did you say, Josh?
Fireworks.
Fireworks, yeah. So we got dragons, fireworks, and buffet. Yeah. The buffet food.
China's the big one. Japan's a small little island to the right.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello. So, Tuffy, from playing baseball both in like America and in Japan, do you think that America should adapt to some of the tactics that they have in Japan or vice versa?
That's a great question. You know, baseball in America is built for power, and baseball in Japan is not built for power. So I don't want to see Joey Votto bunting in the first inning.
I don't want to see anybody bunting in the first inning.
I mean, but
you're doing Japan.
Hamilton, I like to see him bunting the first inning.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's a different. That's a hit.
Oh, well, yeah, you're right.
I don't want to see any sacrifice bunting in the first inning. Billy Hamilton is different than anybody else in the world.
We, as Americans, we don't want to see that. But in Japan, the first leadoff hitter get on, the second guy bunt him over.
In the first inning?
In the first inning. So I can say yes and no. More batting practice, more BP pitchers. But that's more money spent, but that's just me. If they had more if the batting practice was longer in America, as like it was in Japan, I think that would work out well, too. Hmm. But you don't want guys showing up to the ballpark at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, either.
You talked about honor before. Like, it's obviously a big Japanese culture. Are there ways that maybe we don't think about over here that you can dishonor a player or... You know, like, is that something you have to take into account over there just because of the cultural difference?
Yeah, two things is that the guy who's older is always the guy that have to be respected the most. And second, if a pitcher hits you with a ball in Japan and he don't tip his hat, that's insulting to you, too. So that's not honoring the code either.
That's fun.
That is. You know, because normally pitchers in America, they hit you and start walking towards the plate.
Yeah, stare you down.
Throw their glove down.
Yeah.
So here's a question about the culture in Japan. In terms of what just happened in the World Cup, Japan bombed out of the World Cup, and there was this illusion in one of the pieces I read about it that somehow they would be shamed to some degree when they go back. Can you talk about, like, you talked a little bit about the celebrity of baseball, you know, being a baseball player there, but how does losing work in Japan?
Well, let me give... This is not one of my favorite examples to give, but when you have to, you have to. We had a guy named Arakaki who was the best pitcher in Japan at that time, and my team, the Osaka Buffaloes, signed him. And he said he would never play for our team. You know, he wanted, of course, go to one of the Tokyo Giants or Hanshin Tigers in our league, the Fukuoka Daiya Hawks. And the culture, our owner said to the scout, you know, if you don't sign this guy, don't come back. And, you know, the guy didn't sign him. And, you know, and the scout ended up committing suicide in his hotel room. So if I can't explain honor and the way they think of Japan in that aspect of it, I can't explain it no other way, because although I love baseball 110%, I just can't see myself committing suicide for it because I didn't sign a player.
Wow.
I don't.
Next,
yeah.
I don't know how to, next question.
The curveball was very good.
Well, he said honor. I had to give him the. You know.
Yeah.
That's how they think over there. You know.
It is extreme.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, I can go on and on. Guys jumping.
But he's right about the World Cup. I even read. Wasn't it the Japanese fans who like cleaned the stadium when they lost? Or
you
something?
Know, it's. You know, they say it's called saving face, man. You know, they don't like controversy. They'll keep it as simple as they false, but. As simple as possible, but at the same time, they're big on respect and culture, and let's do it this way. This is the only way. This is the right way. Let's do it.
All right.
It's cool.
So on a more positive note, 2001, you hit 55 home runs.
I did.
Tell me about that season. You hit 55 home runs. I just follow that up with, like,
well, and 55 tied the record. Tied the record at the time.
Yeah, to tie the
held
record.
By Sadaharu.
You know, can you compare it to the season Barry Bonds hit? Where, I mean, with how were they pitching you? What did you do? How were you feeling? Were you zoned in? Did you feel invincible? I mean,
how many games are in a season in Japan?
It started out my first year 130, and now they're playing 142.
Okay.
So, first.
So 100. Like, to put that in perspective, 61 was the record here for a long time in 161 games, or 162
games.
Yes. And 55 was the record in 100, would you say 35?
Well, it was for when Sadaharu did it, was 135 games.
Wow.
And I tied him at 130. I hit 130. Matter of fact, I hit my 55th on 135th game of the season also. And we had six games left, and three was against Oryx, and three was against his team.
Yeah. And how many pitches did you see to hit?
Oh, I saw a lot, but they were just high and outside. You know, I just I couldn't do nothing with them. They intentionally walked me on purpose. They never wanted a foreigner to.
That's what I was going to ask. Was there some kind of, like, taboo to let a foreigner hold the record?
You know, that's how they think, you know, they thought about it. They didn't want to. The other team coach, the catching coach said that a foreigner would never own a record in Japan. But it's ironic because Sadaharu is half Taiwanese and half Japanese, so he's held the record for a long time.
Well, that's the other thing I think a lot of people don't understand. You know, so many Americans, you hear Sadaharu and you think that's the greatest Japanese baseball player ever, and he might be. But in Japan, his teammate Nagashima is the guy who is revered. I mean, he's almost like, it's almost like Ruth and Gehrig, whereas, you know, Gehrig was one of the greats of all time, and everybody acknowledges he's one of the greats of all times, but it's Babe Ruth.
Yes.
O was the Gehrig to Nagashima's.
Right, he wasn't Japanese.
You know, yeah, because he wasn't Japanese. And I've always thought that was ironic because, you know, so many people, you weren't thrown pitches because you weren't Japanese. Mm-hmm. But yet, O was a victim of prejudice throughout his career, because it was his father or his mother was Taiwanese.
His father.
His father was Taiwanese, and I mean, it was so far as that. Oh, there was something about dog.
Yes.
His name could be there. One of the variations was dog, and he was demeaned and dehumanized, and yet, the last three games, or did you say three of the last five games that you had to face?
Yes, three of the last five.
He was managing. And he did that to you.
Yes.
Did that alter your thinking about Sadaharu or?
We just before the game started, we did our ceremony at the plate. We signed six balls together. Both guys have name on the ball. I thought he shook my hand. I thought everything was great. And then the game started, And they said that it wasn't his decision, it was the catching coach's decision. And if you understand Japanese baseball, that kind of makes sense because the Japanese, the catcher dictates everything that goes on. But we're talking about Sadahata O.
Yeah, it's still Sadahata O.
It's still Sadahata O.
Wow, wow. One more question, and then we're going to say goodbye to the at-home audience.
So you talked about when you went to Japan, it was kind of your last option to play big league baseball anywhere. What was your mindset going into that? You know, was it, I'm going to do one season in Japan and get right back to the MLB, or was it, this is my second life, I'm going to go and, you know, have the career that you did over there?
That's a great question, because I've been asked that question a lot. And my first, when I got to Japan, I said I was going to play as long as I possibly could. You know, I had teammates that think, you know, I'm 2 years in Japan, get back to the major leagues. I didn't think that. Now, did I think I was going to play for 14 seasons over in Japan? No. But I said, I'm going to play here as long as I can.
And one last thing. We were kind of talking during the break about the same hole, the 55 home run. I want to get you the story. You hit your 55th of the season off of?
Off of Matsuzaka, the Cebu Lions.
Cebu Lions. But, you know, you still had another at-bat in the game, didn't you?
Yes.
So you could have had 56.
Yeah, I mean, and I hit a changeup off of Matsuzaka in the sixth inning and to tie the record. And then the next at-bat, he threw me three fastballs about 98 and told me go sit down. And so I tipped my hat to him, he tipped his hat to me, and I went and sat down. And then my teammate hit a home run off him next at-bat.
To win the game?
To win the game. Yeah,
but, so. I mean, that tells you something. You have to have a lot of respect.
I do.
For Matsuzaka, because there was a lot of, I'm sure there was a lot of talk leading up to that about, will this guy break the record? Yes. And should a Gaijin own this record? Mm-hmm. And Matsuzaka, it's almost kind of rare that he went against the grain.
Yeah, that's why
he challenged you.
Well, think about it. He, you know, guys like Matsuzaka, they play baseball in Japan, but they start their baseball as a little leaguer, dream about playing baseball in America. Those are the superstar guys over there. Those are the Ichiros. Those are the Matsuzakas. Those are the Darvis. They all love Japanese baseball. They all love their culture, but they don't think about playing baseball in America. I mean, in Japan for the rest of their life. They think about eventually getting to the big leagues.
But is that everybody, or is that just the elite?
Well, everybody wants to play baseball in the big leagues, but, you know, realistically, not everybody can.
Because it's funny, because when I lived there, was the early 90s, and it was still, this was before Nomo.
It was
when I lived
hush.
There. And so it was the uncharted territory, and you never heard him talk about it. And you know, then once Nomo went, and then especially when, I mean, you were over there when Ichiro first went.
Yes.
Did you, and you played against Ichiro a
yes.
lot.
Yes.
You played against Ichiro a lot. Did you think, did you see this guy and go, this guy's going to be successful in the big leagues?
Unbelievable. I mean, this guy beat ground balls. I mean, he beat out ground balls to shortstop and second base and to first base from the plate. And he'll beat the first base. And like we said, the scouting report on Ichiro was bounce it and pray he miss it. You know, because he was such a great hitter. He would hit a ball to first base, and they would tell the first baseman to tag the base yourself because Ichiro is going to beat the pitcher to first base.
So you were not surprised when he was...
He, you know, you can predict stuff like that. He asked me a question. One All-Star game, Ichiro asked me, did I think he'd be successful in Major League Baseball? And I just said yes. Now, I didn't think he was going to come and hit 282 hits, and, you know, but at the same time, Ichiro, baseball in America, they challenge you, they give you the opportunity to get hits, and, you know, I'm not surprised that he did, because that would have never happened in Japan.
Well, and the other thing before we turn off the recording, because I know we're going to have the recording, I just want to go. You had almost 2,000 hits in Japan. You had over 1,800 hits in Japan.
Yes.
Over how many years? 9?
No, 13 total.
13 total.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shorter season. We already talked about that.
Yes.
That's a lot of hits. You weren't just a slugger.
I started out as a hitter. My first year I hit .294 with about 25 home runs, 27 home runs, and stole about 20 bases. That's what I did. And like I said, my coach called me in the office and said, you know, we love you hitting 325, but we'd rather for you to hit 280, 290, and 40 to 50 home runs.
Yeah, well, yeah, hit 280, 290 with 40 home runs, that's easy.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, he wanted me to take chances on some pitches.
Right.
You know, try to hit some pitches, have a game plan. What's a good thing about Japan is that we all have goals. You know, I have a goal, but you need a plan. And that's the thing about Japan is that you need to have a plan. And I had a plan over there to sometime, if I got to hit my first at bat, them next three at bats, if it dictated right with the team, I was going to try to hit a ball out the ballpark.
Well, we're going to say goodbye to the listening audience, but then if anybody else has more questions, we might go. Carl freaking Tuffy Rhodes, this has been awesome.
Very cool.
Quite honestly, this was like, since we started talking about this, this show and what we were doing, and we were brainstorming ideas, and like somebody was like, well, Tuffy Rhodes is from Cincinnati. This was my dream guest for this show. I think you could hear it throughout. I can't tell you how much it exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, it was very,
Carl,
very fun.
Tuffy, amazing. So much fun. Anybody who's listening, you fucked up by not coming here.
Okay.
Simply. Did bottom line.
Did we're on the radio?
Yeah. Oh, we can. I can say fuck.
Okay.
All yeah. Right. I've done.
So to wrap things up for those listening at home.
In a much nicer way.
Yeah.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Inquirer Sports. Trent is at C Trent, and I am at Josh Schneed. Check out previous episodes by downloading them, and check out the new show, The Drive. Once again, that link is bit.ly/drivefrazier, but you can also get to it from cincinnati.com. Our next show here is at Motor Pub. Big round of applause for Motor Pub once again for having us out. Awesome, awesome place. We hope you can make it to our next show, which again is Monday, August 11th. On behalf of my co-host, Trent Rosecrans, and our special guest, Tuffy Rhodes, I am your host, Josh Schneed, saying thanks again for listening to the C.Dot Show presented by Inquirer Sports.